أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد، ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد. My condolences to the brothers on the arrival of the night of Ashura. We thank Allah for allowing us to make it. Who knows next year who's going to be alive, who's not going to be alive, where we are. Inshallah, if we're good enough next year, we are next to the dharih of our master Abu Abdullah, inshallah. Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahya Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Oh Allah, make my life the life of Muhammad and Al Muhammad, and my death the death of Muhammad and Al Muhammad. This is part of Ziyarat Ashura. Brothers, life is a treadmill. It's like a treadmill. When the treadmill is on, you can't just stand there. You either run or you fall off. Very simple. That's what we're here for. Allah brought us to grow. You can either run or you fall off. There is no in between, brothers. This is where some people make a big mistake. That they think, and we come to this life, we will live a normal life, we'll go, you know, we'll be in between. There is no in between. You either live Mahya Muhammad in Al wa Ali Muhammad, or you don't live the Mahya of Muhammad and Al Muhammad. That's how it works. You have to be careful. Are you on the side of Muhammad and Al Muhammad, or are you not on the side of Muhammad and Al Muhammad? Every year, millions of people are commemorating. Every year, millions are mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So far, we've learned some of the major mistakes that the community, that the Muslim Ummah made, that led to Ashura happening, unfortunately. Tonight we want to look a little bit at what was the secret, what was wrong with these people at an individual basis. What went wrong with these Kufans and the likes of these Kufans? Till today even we have people similar to them. What is exactly wrong with them that caused them to stand in the face of the most innocent people in their day? The question goes like this. The answer, excuse me, goes like this. It's very simple. When we look at Ziyarat Arba'in, for example, in the text there and other places, and the Quran also talks about this, we find the answer. It's very clear what was wrong with these people. And inshallah, we want to take inspiration from this story so that we don't mess up like this. We spoke about the community, the Muslim Ummah at large, and as a whole in previous nights, and the mistakes they made. Tonight we want to look at these people individually. وَقَدْ تَوَازَرَ عَلَيْهِ مَنْ غَرَّتْهُ الدُّنْيَا وَبَاعَ حَظَّهُ بِالْأَرْضَ لِلْأَدْنَى وَشَرَى آخِرَتَهُ بِالثَّمَنِ الْأَوْكَسِ وَتَغَطْرَسَ وَتَرَدَّى فِي هَوَاهُ. There was a major problem these people had. Ziyarat Arba'in tells us in two or three lines what was wrong with the people. And we see that today we better be careful, because this is not something that was bound to that time and that point in the timeline of the history of Islam. It's something that we're dealing with today. And as a matter of fact, that's why we're here, to pass this test. The Imam teaches us in Ziyarat Arba'in, he says, while those whom the dunya had deceived teamed against him, conspired against Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Those who traded their share with the low and worthless. Each of us has a share, right? Each of us has something that's valuable to us. We want to buy something with it, we try to get the best bargain. We try to get the best we can get for this money that we have, or valuable thing that we have. What did they get in return for their share? They got something worthless and low. What else did they do? And they sold their akhirah for the insignificant price. They also had something that they could sell, which is the akhirah. You can sell your akhirah. They sold it. Okay, what did they get in return? The insignificant price. They sold it at a very low price. The same way the brothers of Yusuf, the Quran says, they sold him for something very worthless and cheap. They were cheap. Here, some people were cheap with their akhirah. Who else? Those who were destroyed in the pit of their hawa, the pit of their desires. So two or three things are mentioned here. They're all the same. One's desires, one's interests. It all sums up in one word, the dunya. The dunya. We find that the main problem with these people was love of dunya. Not that they didn't have love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Trust me, some of them still loved Imam Hussein. And that's what's alarming. That some still love Imam Hussein, but they still have another love too. Allah in the Quran says, I have not put two hearts in anyone's inside. We all have one heart. Mufassirin have explained that when you each, if you have a heart, you give it to one thing. You can't give it to two things. If you had two hearts, bismillah, you can fall in love with dunya and give the other heart to the akhirah. Min qalbayni fi jawfih. Two hearts you can't find in one person. If there's only one heart, you better be careful what you give it to. So now there's questions that come up here. We want to discuss some matters in the following. Number one, how bad is dunya? And then right away when we discuss how bad it is, without getting into the scope, just speaking generally how bad it is, what is the real value of this dunya and what is meant by loving the dunya? Why is it bad? Yeah, because some guys, they get upset when you talk about how bad it is. And let me tell you something, they might be right. We want to discuss, we want to look at what our imams have taught us. We want to get a real picture, not a cliche picture of things. Number three, does all of this mean that having fun, taking pleasure in life is bad? If it's proven that dunya is bad, does that mean we can't take pleasure in life? Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but as a youth growing up, it would make me upset when I would hear how people are bashing dunya in a way as if anything that I'm after when it comes to taking pleasure in this life is bad. Okay, and then if we figure out what's bad, what's not bad, and all that kind of stuff, the bad side of things, how do we get rid of this bad love that is so reproached in Islamic literature and by the imams? And then finally, I want to conclude tonight with some of the things that we're going to take away from all of these nights in general, and to keep in mind, inshallah, for the year to come. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. How bad is love of dunya, really? Well, hadith tells us, حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا رَأْسُ كُلِّ خَطِيئَةٍ. Your love for dunya is the origin, the source of all bad things, all khati'a, all khata' that comes out of someone. When you trace back, you find the roots where? حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا. It's very bad. And we have the story of Bal'am Ba'ura that I'm going to tell you, which is a story about someone who was an alim, a muballigh, a preacher. What happened to him? We want to see how bad it is, love of dunya, right? This person was a contemporary of Prophet Musa alayhi salam, and Prophet Musa saw him as a muballigh, a preacher of Islam, of Tawheed back then. And a teacher of Tawheed, he would help the cause. Maybe if there was mimbars back then, he would go on the mimbar, yes? What happened to this individual? If I have a diet for 20 years of my life, I let go of the diet, what happens, brothers? All of the gains that I had made are lost, right? Same thing with Allah. Till the grave, you got to be careful. No one is guaranteed, no one. What happened with Bal'am Ba'ura? This scientist, they say, this alim, this scholar. Surah A'raf, verses 175 to 176, tell us about him and what went wrong. The active ingredient in his decline. Relate to them an account of him to whom we gave our signs. We gave him ayatuna. This is a lofty, divine knowledge that Allah has given to this individual. What did he do? But he turned away from them. He had them for a while. He reached the point, brothers, where he would do dua and it is accepted. Anything he wishes, he gets. Mustajabu da'wa, they say. That's the point he reached, but eventually in salakha minha, he turned away from what he had. Thereupon, Satan pursued him. Does it say Satan fooled him and then he turned away? No, it says first you mess up, you give room for the outer enemy now to come in. Then Shaitan pursued him. فَأَتْبَعَهُ الشَّيْطَانِ. After he showed weakness, Shaitan came in. Wake up call to all of us and myself. And eventually he became one of the misguided, one of the perverse. Next verse. Had we wished, we would have surely raised him by the means of these ayat that we gave him. He could have gone very high, but it lies in your own hands. You have to want it for Allah to want it. So what happened? Akhlada ila al-ard. The wording here, impeccable. Akhlada ila al-ard. I don't know if we have any people who know Arabic. There's ishrab here. Ishrab is one of those things that beautifies, gives eloquence to the literature. Anyway, akhlada ila al-ard. That he stuck and clung to this dunya. Akhlada ila al-ard. Through these signs that he had, instead of using them for his akhirah. But he clung to the earth and followed his base desires. وَتَّبَعَ هَوَاهُ. So his comparison, his example, his parable is that of a dog. Now Allah here is not trying to diss him, like make fun of him. He's telling us this is exactly what it's like. The dog. إِن تَحْمِلْ عَلَيْهِ يَلْهَثْ أَوْ تَتْرُكْهُ يَلْهَثْ. If you... The dog is always panting, right, brothers? His tongue is always out, and he's panting as if he's thirsty. You give him liters of water, what's he doing after he drinks liters of water? He's panting again. This person, the Quran is comparing him to that dog that is always panting. That's how much he wanted dunya, that no matter what, he's still panting for the dunya. So brothers, generally speaking, is dunya good or bad? From a general sense, at first sight, the dunya is very bad. It destroyed Bal'am Ba'ura. Such is the parable of the people who deny our signs. So recount these narratives. Talk about these things, the Quran says, so that they may reflect. Think about it, guys. Think about it. Okay. So we're starting off. Looks like things are very bad, right? So let's, for example, say this dunya is worth 10%, man. It's not worth that much. 90%. What is the exact value of this dunya? We know it's bad. It's not good. But let's see exactly how much it's worth. Brothers, I know I'm sounding a little bit, you know, I'm taking your hope away. No, we can have fun, inshallah. We'll talk about it. Talk about it. Let's get there. For now, we're making our way into the literature. See what we can get out of it. What is the exact value of the dunya? 10%, 20%, 30%? Well, let's see what Ali ibn Abi Talib says in Nahj al-Balagha. I've chosen three parts. Very quickly, I'll go through to let us know exactly what the percentage is. And I think we'll all agree after we go through these three passages or these three excerpts. We'll agree on the percentage. Number one, Imam Ali says, Wallah la dunyakum hadhihi ahwanu fi aynayya min uraqi khinzir. Okay. He says, this dunya in my eyes, this dunya of yours in my eyes, la dunyakum, is worth less than the bone of a pig that has no flesh on it. Okay. I don't know how many of us care about a pig's bone. But if there is anyone who actually likes pig's bones, the Imam makes sure to finish the job. He says, pig's bone that someone who has leprosy is giving you. Yes? A disease that might even be contagious. I don't know. The doctor's here. I don't want to speak in things, matters that don't relate to me. I'm sorry. But even if it's not contagious, leprosy, someone's giving it to you like that. The Imam is, you know, he's giving us, he's illustrating for us exactly how much is it worth. How much is that worth, brothers? How much would you pay for something like that? 10%, 20%, or 0%? Okay, you're undecided. Let's go to the second one. دنياكم هذه أزهد عندي من عفطة حنزنا. He says, this dunya of yours, these are different parts of Nahj al-Balagha. Your dunya, you know how much it's worth? Less than this, than the sneeze of a goat. Did you even know that goats sneeze? I didn't know goats sneeze. What does it mean that it's worth less than the sneeze of a goat? Well, it's very clear what he means. What comes out when a goat sneezes? What comes out when a goat sneezes? Goat mucus. Whatever the word, goat snot, whatever. How much is that worth? 10%, 20%, or 0%? Zero. Huh? Undecided? Okay, fine, let's move on. دنياكم عندي لأهون من ورقة في فم جرادة تقضمها. That your dunya, in my eyes, is worth less than a leaf that a locust, you know, a grasshopper, is chewing on. Right? Those of you who've seen Discovery Channel, I don't know if it still exists or not. 20 years ago it existed. I don't know if it exists now. You know, the Nature Channel, Discovery Channel. It, when it zooms up to the face of a locust, and the locust is staring right in the camera, and he's chewing on a leaf, right? And it shows its little, whatever those are called, its mouth and the, it's not whiskers, whatever they're called. And he's chewing on a leaf. How appetizing is that sight? It's disgusting, right? He's having a good time, by the way. But when you're watching it, how much is that leaf worth? 10, 20, 30%? Of course, zero. I think these three are enough to show us how much this dunya is worth in his eyes, in Imam Ali's eyes. All right, Imam Ali, thank you for sealing the deal. This dunya is worth nothing. If I ever come up to you, Imam Ali, and I see you, I'm going to try to act cool. If I want to act cool and make sure you like me, I'm going to start speaking bad about the dunya. And apparently, someone made this mistake. And in saying 131 of Nahj al-Balagha, since I know all of you are going to probably go and look this up, of course. In saying 131, go read it. The title goes like this. What Imam Ali said in response to someone who started talking bad about the dunya in his presence. We want to go to literature, but we want to go to it comprehensively. You can't take one part of literature, be a literalist, be like the Khawarij, who when they saw the Quran on the spears, they're just like, the Quran. We forget everything else now. The Quran. Use the mind a little bit more. Understand the deen comprehensively. Here we see that someone was trying to act all cool in front of Imam Ali, apparently. And he started talking ill of the dunya. Look what Imam Ali says to him now. Thank God it wasn't me. He says, O you who abuses the world, the dunya. O you who have been deceived by its deceit and cheated by its wrongs. Of course, when I'm reading the translation, I copy-paste it from somewhere else. I don't like the translations usually. They don't do justice. But we're going to get an idea for sure. I mean, this is the best we can get probably. Do you covet the world and then abuse it? You're in love with the world and then you abuse it and speak bad of it? Let me tell you. Do you accuse it or should it accuse you? Who should be complaining of who? You of dunya or dunya of you? Whoa, Imam Ali, I thought you hated the dunya. I thought we were on the same page. When did it bewilder you or deceive you? Did it deceive you through the decay and the fall of your forefathers? Sometimes you go and you propose to somebody, to a sister, inshallah. The ones who are single, the ones who are married, they can't do that anymore. You know what I mean? It's over. And then when you go and propose, oh, they change her face up so much that she's someone else now. That's deceit. So then once you get married and it's all over, the next day when they wash the makeup off, subhanallah or na'uzubillah. That's deceit, when you don't show your true colors. But, sometimes someone shows you their true colors, you still go after it. Imam Ali is saying, did you not see the decaying of your forefathers under the ground? It showed you. You know it. It's coming, death. It didn't deceive you. It didn't tell you you're going to live forever, the dunya. It didn't. By the decay and fall of your forefathers, or by the sleeping places of your mothers under the ground. How much you looked after them in their illness and nursed them during sickness, desiring them to be cured and consulting physicians for them in the morning when your medicine did not avail them and your wailing for them did not benefit them, your mourning over them did not prove useful to them, you could not ward off death from them with all your power. Okay, so it showed you all of these things, the dunya. And then Imam Ali now points the arrow to the person. And he explains to him what the dunya is all about. Look at this now. Dunya was bad, right? He says, certainly this dunya is a house of truth for him who appreciates it and understands what it's all about. A place of safety for him who understands it. Right? Example, you go to the hotel. You're traveling. You book a hotel room. You appreciate it. It's a place of where you go. You go there to rest and all that. Yeah? But you don't look at it as your abode forever. Start decorating the walls and then fixing things in a way that you're leaving 2 days from now. A house of riches for him who collects provision from it for the next world. Ah. Imam Ali is looking at the dunya like this. He likes the dunya because of certain things. It's a place where you gather provision. Okay. A house of instructions for him who draws instruction from it. This dunya is like a teacher. It is the place, this part it gets a little irfani, guys. It is the place of worship for the lovers of Allah. Worship doesn't happen anywhere else. Here worship happens. The place of praying for the angels of Allah. The place where the revelation of Allah descends. The marketing place for those devoted to Allah. This is a bazaar. You come, you make some transactions. You give your time, your energy for Allah. What do you get in return? Akhirah. Herein they earn mercy, the mercy of Allah, and herein they acquire paradise by way of profit, with an F, profit. They profit here. This is a place where you profit. Okay, Imam Ali says all these good things about dunya, but there he says all those bad things about dunya. Yeah, yeah. So contradiction, right, brothers? Or is there a contradiction? Here, Imam Ali says dunya is like this. Question, in those three examples that I gave, does he also say dunya, or what does he say? There's a difference. It's interesting. Look at the precision of some of the ulama that they employ when approaching literature. If it had said dunya is good and then he says dunya is bad, that is somewhat of a contradiction, although even there it was solvable. But he gives us a clue, Imam Ali. And that's why we call him Amirul Bayan. He knows what he's saying. When you go to those three, he doesn't say dunya this, dunya this, dunya this. In all three of them, what did he say? Dunya kum. The second one. Dunya kum. The third one. Dunya kum. Kum is a pronoun meaning your. It's a possessive pronoun here. Your dunya. The dunya you have. Your perception of dunya, apparently. So what's the problem here, brothers? What's the problem? Let me give you an example and then I'll explain it. What's the problem? So you have water and you're drinking water. You like water. You drink it. Then someone puts salt in it and mixes salt in it. You drink that same water, you spit it out and you're disgusted. Is water bad? Is water bad? Or is salt, the salt that was in it that was added to it, bad? The salt was bad. That's what disgusted you. Dunya isn't bad. The kum part is bad. We're the problem, brothers. We're the problem. Why? We see this dunya as forever. Each and every one of us, if they ask us, I don't know about y'all, if they ask me, when do you think you're going to ever die? I'll tell them, no, I'm never going to die. I'm here forever. Everyone's going to die. I'm going to be alive. That's how we feel. In practice, that's what we're saying. That we're alive forever. And when you're alive somewhere forever, what do? You put all your effort into that and you forget everything else because there is nothing else. Our perception, our approach to this dunya is flawed. Poor dunya didn't do anything wrong. Dunya showed us its true colors from the start. We're losing loved ones. We're seeing everything that's going on around the world. The Quranic worldview is flawed, brother. We don't have that. We are deficient of that. Devoid of the Quranic worldview. That's what the Imam is saying. And look at this. He gathers all of what I said so far in one line in somewhere else when he's talking to someone else. He says, حَقَّنْ أَقُولُ. Trust me, he says. Trust me. مَدْ دُنْيَا غَرَّتْكَ وَلَكِنْ اِغْتَرَرْتَ بِهَا. Amir al-Bayan. Amir al-Bayan. غَرَّ اِغْتَرَّ. He uses the same root in two different forms and they make different meanings. He says, Wallah, he says, the dunya didn't fool you. You were fooled by means of the dunya. There's a very slight and delicate difference here that we have to be careful about. Is that even possible? Yes, that's even possible. Even with Allah, that's possible. Did you know that? Here, I'm not even going to cite a hadith because I might get in trouble. We can even be fooled by means of Allah. Who says this? Quran. The Quran says, وَلَا يَغُرَّنَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغَرُورِ. Don't let the gharur, the one who deceives, deceive you. Using what tool? Using Allah. Sometimes we say Allah is all merciful this, all merciful that. All of a sudden we embrace pluralism, for example. All of a sudden we make mistakes all in our life. Oh, Allah will forgive, will forgive. Well, one tawbah at least. No, no, Allah will forgive. I don't do salat, I don't do fasting, but I remember Allah a lot. Allah is so merciful. لا يغرنكم بالله الغرور. Don't let shaitan use Allah to fool you. Wow. So the dunya, that's easy. If Allah can be used, Imam Ali is saying, the dunya didn't come and proactively fool you. You were fooled by means of it. It was a tool that someone used to fool you. Whether it was shaitan, whether it was yourself, I don't know. Okay, so the true value of dunya, what? It's 0% and 100%, brothers. Depending on the way you look at it. Your approach, your understanding, your perspective of it. Question number three that we had. Okay, having said all of this, does that mean we can't have fun in life? We can't have pleasure in life? No, brothers, it's very simple. Let me just give you an example and a few verses and we move on. I think this is very clear. You've got your M&Ms, you've got your Kit Kat. It's all good. It tastes good, doesn't it? Oh, I like it personally. Yeah, inshallah, before I leave, you'll buy me bags of them, inshallah. No, I'm just kidding. You've got your chocolate like this, your candies, but then all of a sudden some little kid takes those and then what does he do? He says, this is all that matters to me. Baba comes home with Swiss chocolate. He's been traveling. He's from Swiss, coming back from Switzerland. I've got some major Swiss chocolate. He says, no, no, no. I'm ready to trade the Swiss chocolate for M&Ms. Well, he's a kid. He doesn't understand. But if you get older, you can't make such mistakes, brothers. These are very big mistakes in life. You don't trade M&Ms, a Swiss chocolate for M&Ms. You don't. It's a very important lesson we're taking tonight. The Imams, the Quran, they're telling us again and again, please don't make the mistake that you trade your Swiss chocolate. I don't know, some people might be allergic to Swiss chocolate. I don't know. I'm talking about, you know, normal circumstances here. You don't trade that which is better for that which is worse. You don't trade it. But now let's say you can have both. We'll have both. You get it? My cupboard has room for both. And I'll put both in there, fine. But if I ever have to make the decision between these two, that's when I'm careful. Not to take this over that. Akhirah over dunya. I will not compromise any of my akhirah for dunya. I will take of the dunya whatever I want to the extent that it does not compromise my akhirah one bit. Because I am greedy. When it comes to akhirah, we learned that you have to be greedy in the sense that you have to get as much akhirah as you can. And also push others towards akhirah as much as you can. Yes, it's unlimited, infinity and eternity. And that's what these verses are saying, for example. When they speak bad of dunya, they're not saying don't take pleasure in dunya. You look at the wording, you see that you find the wording very nice. For example, it says, مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَٰهَهُ هَوَىٰ. A person who takes his desires as his Lord. Well, yeah, if you take your desires as your Lord, that means you're going to follow whatever they tell you, you forget your akhirah. بَلْ تُؤْثِرُونَ الْحَيَاةَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. You are preferring the dunya. تُؤْثِرُونَ, preferring it. Preferring is the problem. كَلَّا بَلْ تُحِبُّونَ الْعَاجِلَةَ وَتَذَرُونَ الْآخِرَةَ. You are taking that which you have right now, loving that, and leaving that which is to come. That's the problem. Don't miss out on that. If you can take both, take both. If not, you take the akhirah over dunya. When what situations are you have to are you going to have to make a decision? The harams. That's all. Other than that, if Allah says you can take this pleasure, it's halal, just because it's pleasure is not a problem. Look at what Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, he says, recite salawat. He says, Mala Aliyin wa na'imin yafna wa ladhatin la tabqa. He says, Ali has a problem. What does Ali have to do with blessings that end? Ladhatin, pleasure that ceases to exist, that doesn't endure, doesn't last. That's the problem with Ali ibn Abi Talib. It doesn't say, what does Ali have to do with any pleasures? No, he wants the best pleasures. Pleasure and having fun and hanging out, guys, it's okay. But at the same time, you got to be smart. Some kids, they spend too much time having fun. What happens is, you don't get a proper education. What happens is, you don't get a proper job. What happens is, you got to compromise a little bit. And certain haram things, maybe your job is haram. Maybe other things happen because of you trying to earn a livelihood. Haram comes later. So right now, sometimes some of the halals, brothers, what? We got to be careful a little bit to keep it moderate. And be careful. I've said this before. Don't put yourself subject to problems later in the future. Don't take the first step towards haram, even that if that first step is halal. You got to be smart. A Shia, the Shia is kayyis, is smart. He's careful. Or else, Surah A'raf verse 32 very explicitly says, there's nothing wrong with the good stuff here. Say, who has forbidden the adornment of Allah which He has brought forth for His servants in this life? And the good things of His provision, the good stuff here. قُلْ هِيَ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ. As a matter of fact, this is for the mu'mineen, the good stuff. These are for the faithful in this life of this world and exclusively for them on the Day of Judgment. Yeah, don't worry about it. But yes, the speakers, the ulama, the ones who are leading the communities, they have to be a little careful, brothers. We don't want to fall into this fallacy as well. Sometimes some people that are leading the community, that are speakers, that are ulama, scholars, hawza students, whatever it is, they have to be a little bit more careful. Because what we do, I'm speaking to myself right now, if does anyone have a mirror so I can look at myself as I say this. People will take it as black and white. If I show a little bit too much attention to the to flashy things and glamour and stuff, the people will see it, okay, the dunya is something we have to run for. No. And sometimes this fallacy you see is that they say, I have a lot of things that are, you know, very glittery, but I'm not attached to them. And you know, zuhd is not having, but not being attached. Yes, we have hadith for this, true. But our ulama, we're very careful here. You don't see this in the tradition of the ulama. You don't see it. No, they would stay away. They would keep it normal and moderate. Inshallah, this is something that people like myself have to keep in mind. I'm afraid if later on I'm driving my Ferrari or something, people will show me this clip, right? This part of my lecture. I shouldn't have said it. But, you know, it's never going to happen. No Ferraris for me. Okay, question number four. How do we get rid of this love now? The bad love, of course. The extra love. The love that Umar ibn Sa'd, la'natullah alayh, he had for this dunya when he had to decide. He says, I know that I am between Jahannam and Jannah. I'm choosing between them. Some say he stayed up all night walking in circles, thinking. And he eventually made the decision that he's going to take dunya over akhirah. This, how do we get this love of dunya out of our hearts? What's the way? Because brothers, love is not something that's in our hands. Yeah? You see something or somebody even, you fall in love, my friends. Who are we kidding? You fall in love. Man is created like this. He loves beauty. He loves all the good stuff out there. So when you fall in love, no one can tell you, don't be in love. You know, that's not something that's in my hands anymore. My heart is gone. It's flying somewhere else. What we can do is watch out for the preliminary steps that lead to certain things. For example, I won't talk to somebody when I know I'll fall in love. Yeah? Yeah, I'll stay away from that. This is what I said the other night, brothers. The first step, if you know, just texting, wa alaykum as-salam, the emoji, you know, that kind of stuff, that's going to, it'll slowly snowball. Come on, guys, we know what I'm talking about. Don't hurt yourself like that and hurt her or him later because of all the other trouble that's going to come up. If the text comes and you just don't answer, it's all right. If you know that it's going to lead to other things, don't take the first step. Be careful. Okay. Now the dunya, same thing. What do I do? What are the preliminary steps? Or what is the source of the love of dunya? Brothers, very clearly I will say this, that the ulama teach us, the greats who have traversed and walked the path, walked the walk. They will tell you it all stems from one thing. And that one thing, there's a way to get rid of it. What is that one thing? What is the source, the water source to this weed that we have in us? Sometimes you have weeds in us, you have weeds in you, you want to take them out one by one. Sometimes you cut off the water source, all of them die out themselves. That water source, what is it? They say it is da'ful iman, weakness of iman. But look, sounds cliche again. Let me talk a little bit, see what we mean by this. Weakness of iman, the fact that I don't believe in Allah that much, although we believe, we have the basic tawheed, of course. But we haven't believed that we love Him. We haven't believed about the Akhirah is to come. Yes? How do I raise my iman level so it reaches a point where love of other things slowly, slowly dies out itself? I don't have to fight it. Because love is not something you can fight. I'm going to say it very quickly. Brothers, let me start with a story. Right? We have some fables in Persian culture. And they all revolve around this one guy who was funny. He did funny things, but there's lessons in the stories about him. Mullah Nasruddin. Yeah? I don't even know if he really existed or not. He probably didn't. But the lessons are important. Brothers, look at this story. They say one time, one of the funny things he did was, he calls out to people, there's free food being served, I don't know, such and such place. Right? Or free biryani, whatever. Everyone starts running. One person, two people, three people. I always use this example. I love this story. 10 people, 20 people, 30, 100 people. After a while he's having a ball, watching everyone running, all of a sudden, he's like, wait a minute. What if they are actually serving free food there? And he starts running too. There's a lesson in this. Practice things happening sometimes are so strong that they will hammer into our heads something that we, a belief, a thought, a notion. If I'm sick and I keep telling myself, oh my God, I'm sick, I'll never get better, you probably won't get better. But if I'm sick and I tell myself, don't worry about it, it'll be over soon, it'll be over soon, it'll be over soon. They say this, that it's out there. The however you pronounce it, the placebo or placebo effect. What is that? What is that? You go to the doctor says, oh, you're in bad shape. I have to give you a pill that's going to, it's revolutionary and it will fix you. And you go back home, you take the pill, not knowing that this is just a sugar pill or something. There's nothing in there. It's nothing. But just the fact that you believe this is going to make you better. They say, I don't know what the percentage is. Once again, I'm getting into fields that I'm not supposed to talk about. 25-35% of an effect, they say, I don't know what it is. But they say there is an effect here. And what do they call it? The placebo or placebo effect, whatever. Yeah? That's the power of practice and action. A false rumor that he made up, he believed it himself. He made it up, he believed it. Because he sees lots of people going. Now, when it comes to our aqaid, our beliefs, I believe in Allah, I believe in Akhirah. If every day I am sinning, every day I'm going against Allah, slowly, slowly, the soul starts to believe that He doesn't really exist. The iman level starts dropping. And that's where all the catastrophes come. On the other hand, I believe he exists. Everything that I do in my life, I'm practically remembering him before it. Even subconsciously, I am remembering him before it. Is this something haram or not? It's on my radar. Slowly, the soul believes that he's there. The soul knows he's there. We know he's there. Believes, feels. 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years. Before you know it, you're like, oh my God, Ayatollah Bahjat wasn't all that great. This is how it was done. 60 years of ubudiyya and obedience of Allah, I'm set. But who is willing to do that? We're all after the diet pill. We don't want to clean up our diet and just go and do some cardio every day. We want to buy that home gym that we're going to use for 2 weeks and then put it aside forever. When it comes to spirituality, same thing. The iman level should never be dropped. It should never drop, because if it does, hope of other things comes. Jealousy comes. Greed comes. All the bad weeds of our essence and our existence, they start coming in because the water source is running and we have to cut it. We have to cut it off. But at the same time, brothers, it doesn't mean we don't have tawbah. Some people, they say, if 1 inch of water crosses your head, you drown, right? So if I commit a sin, it's over. 1 inch of water crossed my head. Let me just go 1,000 meters underwater. Right? If you go underwater 1 inch, 1 centimeter, you drown, right? So I'll just go now, I'll just let go altogether. No, get back up. The door to tawbah is always open. I've explained this before too. Having said all of that, concluding from all of what was said, the dunya itself is not bad, poor thing. Dunya is a tool. It can be used for good, it can be used in a bad way. Our approach, we have to fix ourselves. And to fix ourselves, there's only one way, as I said. Wajib and haram of Allah has to be observed. Obedience of Allah has to happen. When obedience of Allah happens, my iman strengthens and the hub of dunya goes, inshallah, when the time comes for bigger tests. I won't fail like Umar ibn Sa'd failed. This hub of dunya, brothers, is everything. Ashura and Muharram, when it arrives, is a good time to begin and make that decision, brothers. Because when Muharram comes, when Imam Hussein is in his final moments, that's the time when we understand that this dunya apparently isn't worth that much. A dunya that Hussein is slaughtered in isn't worth that much. To me, it's not worth that much. It's a good time to start, brothers. But if you wanted to endure, this is the formula that the greats give us. Continuous obedience of Allah till the grave, inshallah. Over these nights, we covered many stories, lessons, practical lessons, aqaid we talked about, history, these things we talked about. I just want to, there's a list here I want to read off of very quickly. What we take away, inshallah, from this ashra. One, we have to make a decision. We have to fix our intention that I'm going to fix my life, inshallah, from this day forward. I'll work on it. I won't be perfect from day one. It's all right. Allah doesn't want that. Allah wants us to move. The treadmill, we have to run on it or we'll fall off and we'll break something in our body. You have to move in this life. There is no being stagnant. Number one. Number two, understand what is required of us, both in our beliefs, in our Quranic worldview, and setting our Quranic worldview straight. The way we look at this dunya, giving it the real value and its worth, not more, and not even less even. What it really is worth. This only comes through studying the Quran a lot. Fixing that one, number two, of the things that we have to do and we have to understand that is required of us is the taqwa part that I've been emphasizing again and again. And our obedience to Allah. Learning the wajib and haram of Allah through our maraja and applying that in our everyday lives so that our iman goes up. Number three, incorporate the best akhlaq that we have when it comes to individual life, when it comes to the community and serving the community. And being patient and helping out as much as we can. If we fix ourselves, the community will be fixed. And then going and trying to fix our society and raising awareness and taking the hand of the people and explaining to the people and introducing to the people and the world who Imam Hussein was. Because it looks like the return of the Mahdi, inshallah, is going to be through Hussein, alayhi salam. Let's go to Karbala one last time before tomorrow. Tomorrow it's all over. It's the night of Ashura. Ya Abu Abdullah, we began this series, we began these nights thanking you. thanking Allah for giving us the opportunity to experience true love. And we're going to say it again now, that we are now we have approached the night of Ashura and the day of Ashura, and we thank you for giving us this opportunity. Ya Allah, give us the tawfiq tonight, tomorrow, to go all out, to be touched, and to make decisions for our future. Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah. Over history, throughout history, millions, millions, billions have fallen in love with Hussein. They have understood what Hussein is all about. But not everyone is going to be like Rubab. Lady Rubab apparently had a certain ma'rifah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Then Imam Hussein says a home that Rubab is in, that Sukaina is in, is a very good home. Imam Hussein loves Rubab, and Rubab loves Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the mother of Ali al Asghar and the mother of Sukaina bint al Hussein. If Ali al-Asghar had grown up a little bit to be the age of Sukaina, we would have seen how beautiful his talking would be. Because they say Sukaina also, she would talk very beautifully. Everyone loved her when she would speak. Very cute, very adorable. Ali al-Asghar didn't get that chance, brothers. The same way another 6-month-old by the name of Muhsin never got the chance. And they made sure that Imam Hussein has one less companion on Ashura. And Muhsin will never make it on Ashura, or else Imam Hussein would have had an Abbas, he would have had an Ali al-Akbar, he would have had a Muhsin, his smaller brother. The same way this soldier never made it, there's another soldier. When Rubab, she had Ali al-Asghar, God knows how proud she was that I have brought a son for Hussein. How proud is she? But a time came on Ashura. Hussein is looking around. Everyone is gone. Even Abbas is gone. It's over, Hussein. Hussein, it's as if he says, Alhamdulillah, I passed the tests of Allah. One after another, I have given everyone that I had. That's on one hand. On the other hand, Rubab, as if she's saying, why couldn't I have brought a son sooner, maybe? Someone to help Hussein. Zainab gave Aun and Muhammad. Ali al-Akbar also went, the other son of Hussein. I wish I could have done something. All of this is happening, brothers. And then they say, it's as if Ali al-Asghar has heard all of this. He says, there's one more soldier left. Imam Hussein comes to the tents. Zainab, bring me my little son. There's still one more test that has to be passed. Hussein, I don't know how he did it. They say he came to the tents, he took this baby. The army is waiting for Hussein to come to fight. All of a sudden, they see Imam Hussein, but he doesn't look like he wants to fight. He's coming, but on him, they say, was the cloak of the Prophet. On his head, the turban of the Prophet. There is no weapons with him that he has besheathed and is ready to fight with, but it looks like he's carrying something precious under his cloak, they say. As he arrives, there's another soldier that wants to do his part. Oh, Hussein, oh, father. It's as if Asghar is telling his father, I can't fight with my hands, but at least I can touch the hearts of this army, at least get some people to come on your side. Hussein goes close to the army. He takes aside the cloak, and behold, there is a precious infant in the hand of Hussein. He raises this infant high in front of the army. Ya qawm, in lam tarhamuni. If I have done something wrong, if you are not going to have mercy on me, show some mercy to this child. أَلَا تَرَوْنَهُ كَيْفَ يَتَلَذَّى عَطَشًا. Do you not see, like a little fish out of water, his mouth is opening and closing out of thirst. Even if you don't do anything, he's going to die. Slowly the army is being touched. Some say that some of the army begins weeping at the sight of this little infant. Brothers, those of you who have a 2-month-old, a 3-month-old, a 6-month-old who is still nursing, I'm not saying put your child through trouble and hardship. Aliin al-Asghar went through the hardship, but when he's crying for his mother, think about Asghar a little bit so that you can weep a little better when the night of Ashura comes. When you see this helpless child crying, asking for its mother, because Aliin al-Asghar, he didn't have any more energy to cry for his mother. There's no more water in the tents for Ali to drink so that at least he can move his arms and legs. All that is left is his lips opening and closing like a fish out of water. Hussein says, do you not see? Slowly the army is being touched. Aliin al-Asghar, this final soldier, is doing his job very well. All of a sudden, Umar ibn Sa'd turns to Harmala. Harmala says, who should I strike? The father or the son? He says, do you not see? The reports say, the whiteness of the throat of Aliin al-Asghar. As Hussein is speaking to the crowd, they didn't let him finish his words. They say a 3-pronged arrow landed on the throat of Asghar. فَقَطَعُوا فَذَبَحُوا مِنَ الْوَرِيدِ إِلَى الْوَرِيدِ. The throat from ear to ear is cut and slit open. The body of Ali is shaking in the arms of Hussein. Some say the head of Asghar was hanging by the skin. Hussein takes the blood of Ali, throws it up to the sky. Ya Allah, Ya Allah, the only thing that makes this tragedy easy on me, Ya Allah, annahu bi'ayni Allah. Ya Allah, the only reason I can bear this tragedy is that you are watching. They say, Hussein got his answer from the army. This army will never change. Hussein, your turn has come. He goes back to the tents. I hope Rubab was not there to see the body of Asghar headless. He dug a little grave for Ali and al-Asghar behind the tents. Oh, Rubab, the tragedy that you went through, but the love Rubab has for Hussein. She doesn't weep for Asghar, they say, for 1 whole year after Ashura. She never sat under any shade out of grief for Hussein. She doesn't say, my Asghar. She says, my Hussein. Laytakum fi yawmi Ashura jami'an tanzuruni. كيف أستسقي لطفلي فأبى أن يرحموني. إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. اللهم اغفر للمؤمنين والمؤمنات والمؤمنين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات. اللهم اقض حوائجنا
اللهم اشف مرضانا وارحم موتانا وسلم ديننا ودنيانا. اللهم ارزقنا زيارة الحسين وشفاعة الحسين يوم الورود، وعجل اللهم في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان. صلوات.